What's up, guys? Welcome to the first episode of the Buckets and Banter podcast. My name is George Marshall. I am here with my co-host, Jeffrey Theodore Bendel III.
Not my middle name.
I think that will be an ongoing joke for me, is just being more and more creative with incorrect names for you.
Nor am I a third.
Are you a second or a junior?
Yeah.
Oh, very nice. Me too. Second.
Nice.
Very, very nice. So, we're obviously excited to be here amidst the awkward introduction where I called an incorrect name for Jeff. But for our podcast, and the reason that we wanted to start something like this is pretty simple. We're two guys in the basketball space. For those of you who don't know a ton about me, I'm the head coach and the athletic director at the Burlington School and the director of Team Loaded South. Three SSB sponsored team or an Adidas sponsored program. Jeff, do you want to give an introduction about kind of your background in this space?
Sure. I'm the director of player analysis, excuse me, for Phenom Hoops. Have been for just under 10 years. And yeah, mainly I just deal with writing and scouting and working in event operating for high school basketball.
I think that for us, like, the number of times we can refer back to like group texts and things of that nature where we're talking about all the things that we want to discuss. This has been a few years in the making. And so for the six people that end up listening to this podcast, first of all, shout out to you. But just know that like we're in this space and talking about basketball has been something that we've wanted to do for a very long time. And it's fun. Like this is not meant to be a podcast that is making you choose a side of a political party and making you like get super upset one way or the other. No, the banter is meant to be funny, and we're going to explain a little about that when we start talking about the show breakdown in a second. But for those of you that are listening, welcome. We appreciate you, and we're excited to get this thing started. For us, the show breakdown for Buckets and Banter is as follows, and we spent some time thinking about this, and I think that it's actually kind of a perfect fit for what we're doing. We're always going to start with something comedic. Today's topic is one that Jeff has done extensive research on when we talk about the curse of the Charlotte Hornets and how we both feel that they are truly the most cursed franchise in American professional sports. They're not discussed ever in that regard, Jeff. Never. And I think that it's time that we shed some light on this issue.
Yeah.
I don't know how you feel about that, but I'm excited for a little comedic relief to start the show.
Yeah. It's sad comedic relief, unfortunately, but yeah, I think looking at the Hornets franchise starting when they became the Bobcats, it's just been in dismay ever since. They've had terrible luck, they have terrible management, and it's just been just a slew of bad decisions followed by mediocre basketball.
It'll be an exciting topic for sure. And the best part about that is because all the information is so public, like it's pretty easy to look back and think about some of the ways that they have not landed who they should have landed. And we'll get into all that in a second, but we're always going to start with something comedic. So look forward to that for sure. The second thing that we're going to do is we're going to do some sort of countdown, whether it be a top five, top 10. It might involve coaches, it might involve our favorite players. Anything like that. Then the third part is going to be a hot and what I would consider a relevant topic, something that's impacting either professional, collegiate, or grassroots basketball. And then the last thing is probably Jeff's favorite, which is going to be a sound off, where it's just going to be each of us taking a turn to kind of chime in about a topic that we feel very passionately about in the moment. I'm really excited about that personally because when I start thinking about all the different things that you can discuss, like we could do this for 6 hours straight. That's obviously not realistic, nor would we ever expect someone to listen to the first version of this podcast for that long. But it is something that I'm obviously really excited about, and I know that Jeff is as well. But do you have any last words for our brief listeners before I inform them about how seriously we're taking this?
Yeah, this is very unserious, and we are taking it very seriously. So just keep that in mind.
That is a great way to put it. And here's a perfect example of that. So if you're wondering why we're doing this over Zoom and then posting it to platforms, whether it be through podcasting or whether it be on YouTube, our production value, our production budget is $0, literally none. So if you're wondering why it's on Zoom, that's why it's on Zoom. Shout out to us for that. If you're wondering where the name Buckets and Banter came from, you might be thinking like, oh, this is two friends who have been talking about the game for a while. All of that is true, but shout out to ChatGPT for coming up with the name. It was the third option listed, but the others were extremely whack, not worth even entertaining whatsoever, in my opinion. I forget some of them. I'm sure that I could type it in now. Maybe I'll give the audience a little teaser of that going into the next episodes. And then the
They're
last
pretty
thing, which is
forgettable.
like, say it again.
They're pretty forgettable.
You're pretty forgettable, right? And the last thing is the beautiful graphic that you saw that was also AI generated. So we're really rocking and rolling here with a high quality podcast scenario. But
I
let's
don't know if anybody saw the graphic. It did get one retweet, and it was by me.
It was by you, yes. And I think that people were probably like, this is so vague. I don't even think it's worth caring about for one
What
second.
is this random thing?
Yeah. It's like George tagged Jeff again. This sucks. What are we doing?
No description, no
No
context.
description, no hype, no nothing. And I think that honestly, we should probably just release this as such. Like,
Yeah.
don't do a single thing beforehand. No, like gassing it up at all. Just getting straight to it, and seeing how it goes.
Yeah, couldn't agree more.
So as we get started here, let's get into kind of the first part of our podcast, which is obviously the comedic topic. Today's comedic topic is going to be all about the Charlotte Hornets. First of all, it's important for people to know context within us delivering this message because we were scheduled to record this 2 weeks ago. So, within the last 2 weeks, the following has happened. For one, that was the day where there was crazy storms outside, flooding throughout tons of central North Carolina. There's still this is, I don't mean to make it a somber moment, but I would be remiss to say that, like, there were still issues with Mebane, North Carolina, right down the road with like serious water supply issues. So, like it was a huge storm. It obviously impacted our ability to do anything, and we're glad that everyone is safe. That being said, let's focus on the topic at hand. When we were since we first recorded this, the Charlotte Hornets have won the NBA Summer League, which is like
First title in history, first accomplishment. Hang it in
honestly
the rafters.
since the 90s might be their greatest accomplishment.
Absolutely, it is. Since they came back as the Wildcats, it without a question.
So let's get into why I personally believe they're the most cursed. But actually, before we even get into that, can you give kind of a brief history for the listeners about like this is the history of the Charlotte Bobcats slash Hornets and
Sure.
what has become of them?
Yeah, absolutely. So the team came back from the Hornets that we knew in the 90s. In 2004, they returned as the Charlotte Bobcats. They had since then 3 seasons under 20 wins, 5 under 30 wins, 8 total, and 9 17 total in under 40 wins. So they've only had 4 40-win seasons and 3 playoff appearances in 21 years. They have been abysmal. And they've tried. Actually, that's really the sad part is they've tried
Right.
throughout this entire time. They've made given a real effort to compete, and they're just not that good. It's yeah. So in 2004, it really started when they were granted the fourth pick of the franchise, or fourth pick as a as an expansion team. The league rank gave them the pick. They then traded it up and drafted Emeka Okafor. Good player, but obviously you look back and revisionist history says that they could have taken other guys, but Devin Harris, Luol Deng, Andre Iguodala, Al Jefferson, Josh Smith, J.R. Smith, the list goes on of just guys that were really good. Context applies. They're not taking a lot of these guys at that range, but Emeka Okafor was super productive in college, and
Yes.
you know, he was a good little young piece to start their franchise?
I think that the way that I and like the way we discussed this was there's two elements to being cursed, right? The first one is obvious, which is who did you pick or who did you miss on? Like, those are discussed by every franchise all the time. Like, we could have had Jokic, we could have had Anthony Davis, we could have had et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And those within this conversation are truly hilarious. There are especially egregious years when you think about 2011, 2012, and 2014, which I will gladly discuss in a moment. But to me, the more cursed part about the Hornets is what is the pick you should have had based on your lottery odds that you did not get? Now, upon the research from you, you made it clear that in 2004, when they were the Bobcats, they didn't have an option to get Dwight Howard anyway. So that was not on the table. Initially, what I thought was, oh my goodness, they could have had the number one pick. They could have had Dwight Howard. They could have had one of the greatest centers in the history of basketball. And instead, they ended up with Emeka Okafor. Now, first of all, your point, I think, was really big. Like, Emeka Okafor in college was him beyond him. Like, he averaged 19, 13, and 5. He won a national championship, and he was on one of the greatest teams in the history of college basketball in the 2004 UConn Huskies. So it's not like this guy was a slouch, but when you look back throughout the course of his career, injury-ridden, like had tons of issues in terms of his just not able really to get things going outside of maybe one season. So 2004 automatically, I mean, if you talk about who they missed on, you really said it already. Like, wouldn't you like to have Luol Deng, Andre Iguodala? I mean, Al Jefferson. Like, the name that jumps off the list here to me is Al Jefferson. Like, I know that he battled injuries of his own, but when you start talking about one of the most productive below the rim players with less than three dribbles, certainly in the last 25 years, he's up there, man. Like, you got to take a guy like that.
Well, and to your point, they made good on that mistake, and then they signed him 10 years later.
Yeah, the 10-year reunion where they get him
7 years later.
absolutely wild. But it doesn't get better in 2005. Like, 2005, and this is one where it's truly a testament to the pick you should have gotten and didn't. And the reason that I say that is everyone knew Andrew Bogut was going number one. Marvin Williams had a ton of buzz after North Carolina's national championship run. But when you start talking about these point guards, right? Initially, people probably thought all three of these guys were home runs. And I think that was the narrative of that draft, if I'm not mistaken.
Sure. Yeah, but to your point, they were supposed to get the third pick. They end up getting the fifth pick. Deron Williams and Chris Paul, 3 and 4. Raymond Felton goes fifth. And then with their other pick, they draft Sean May over Danny Granger. So it's just, again, they can't get out of their own way. They're drafting Ray Felton, a good player, solid player, had almost an all-star that 1 year. It hurts when you're supposed to get other guys, especially someone like Chris Paul, who not only would have changed the entire trajectory of the franchise, but from North Carolina, obviously, and went to college in North Carolina, and just would have been a unbelievable. If there was ever a pick that needed to be fixed, please, David Stern, where were you on this one?
Yeah, where were you on that one, buddy? Like, that's 100% right. And the other thing too is it's not like Raymond Felton had a bad NBA career. He's a 15-year veteran. The difference is, again, when you talk about the curse about who you missed on, you should have gotten a top 75 player ever. Instead, you don't. And so when you start thinking about, like, well, I could have had Al Jefferson. I could have had Chris Paul. And then it just continues to build going into the next one. 2006 is so bad. I literally forgot who they picked until this moment, even after recording. And that's not to say that it was a particularly solid draft. But when you look at their third overall pick, picking Adam Morrison, like, I get it after college, but it was so bad. that it's impossible to just look past. You passed on Brandon Roy. Again, injuries derailed his career, but when he was in the NBA, he may have been a top two shooting guard in the league. I mean, would you agree with that? That's pretty close.
There's a reason he's my header on Twitter. That's the I live and die by the Brandon Roy sword.
So you could have had a team of Al Jefferson, a team sans curse, of course. You could have had a team of Al Jefferson, Chris Paul, Brandon Roy slash Rudy Gay slash anyone else that you could have possibly gotten. I'm trying to look at some other people in the two.
Yeah, I so I'm gonna instead of having Al Jefferson, how about we take Luol Deng or Andre Iguodala, who are just flat out better?
Yeah, and I think that that's fair. But I mean, even a backcourt of like, say you get Luol Deng, right, who was a tremendous player, I believe was an all-star, if I'm not mistaken. Like, he
Yeah.
was or was not.
Yeah. You said
So, I
Luol.
mean, an all-star small forward plus Chris Paul plus Brandon Roy slash
Can you
Rudy.
imagine a team with Chris Paul and Brandon Roy?
I mean,
Stupid.
it's just insanity. It's just a series of a series of like historically bad luck, but also just incompetence. Like, this was a true failure by them in 2006. Just awful. I mean, those are the first 3 years, Jeff. Like, that's what hurts the most. It's absolute insanity.
True, but they're getting better. They're trying. They went from
Sure, sure.
18 wins to 26, and then here we go. After drafting Adam Morrison, they 33 wins. Got Brennan Wright from Carolina over Joakim Noah, most notably, and just not a lot of guys they would have taken in this range that ended up being super awesome. But that's the big one that hurts, and that rounds out our dream team of hypothetical picks here. They now have their center with Joakim Noah, so it's tough.
Who do
Brennan
you
Wright,
think?
solid role player, but per player efficiency darling, but not
Right.
a.
No, 100%. That's well said.
I
Who
mean, do you ever remember back then when they used to show his numbers? He was unbelievable in 13 to 18 minutes a game, and then was the same amount of production in any more minutes. If he could play in 40 minutes, he was going to give you the same amount of production as
That
if.
is hilarious. We got to find one of those graphics, but we can't because our production value is zero.
Yeah,
But
someone get on that.
what would you say in terms of like notable years for this franchise where it was just an absolute calamity? I have three personally, but I'd love to hear just what you're thinking in terms of like, oh my God, this was just awful.
Yeah, I think the main one that sticks out to me is the 2012 year. That one really, I think it's just a knife in the gut. They
It's
were
so bad.
awful. They were so bad. And they don't even get the first pick, which would have, again, another even more so than Chris Paul. Anthony Davis at the time was a surefire, guaranteed all-star, all-NBA potential first pick. And there was not a doubt that he was going to be great. And when they get the second pick, not only do they not get Anthony Davis, but then they don't draft Bradley Beal. So they take Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, who just never figured it out offensively, especially with the jump shot. And I think that was, to me, one of the most painful years. I'm not even a fan of the franchise. I find it egregious.
But you also have to look at like it's not just Bradley Beal, it's Damian Lillard.
Sure.
And then the second round picks that year, you're looking at Chris Middleton and Draymond Green. And
Even worse, even worse.
like you can't
They.
look at like a second round pick compared to the second overall pick. I get that. Like, I understand that a GM is never gonna think about it in terms of that. But when you start thinking about like, guys, you missed on two multi all-star players that are like pretty, like, I mean, these are max contract guys at a certain point. I mean, this is
Arguably the
right.
worst part about all this, if people might not even remember this wrinkle, Oklahoma City offered James Harden for the number two pick. That was declined. And then they offered the same deal to Washington for three, and that was also declined.
Oh my gosh.
So.
That's beyond bad. That's absolutely ridiculous. How about this, though, to follow that up? You want to talk about again a series of just ultimate failures in terms of these three in a row? I haven't even mentioned the Bismack draft, which was 2011, because these next three are just truly so bad. 2013, they draft Cody Zeller. Now, as I'm looking at this draft, that means they passed on CJ McCollum. That means they passed on Giannis. That hurts. That's
I'm
a
going to have to be the person to apply context here, though. Not a great draft. And those, like, even at the time, they weren't going to draft those guys.
no
Cody Zeller,
question.
solid pro.
It's the whole conversation though, right? You miss on Giannis and Rudy Gobert and you pick Cody Zeller. And again, this is no knock to any of these guys. We're not like taking shots at pros. We know how difficult it is to get to that place, but still, like, that hurts.
Yeah, no, it's tough. It's tough to swallow. I just terrible draft.
And then the next year, who did they draft in 2014? Do you know?
Noah Vonleh.
Not much better, man. Not
Yeah.
much better. I mean,
Again,
especially
look
when
at the
it.
range they're picking in, though. In defense of them, they Zach LaVine was probably the pick or TJ Warren, but
But again, should they have been moved up? Because there's some killers in this draft. I mean, you've got Embiid. Like, you've got solid pieces. You've got Julius Randle. Pretty
yeah, but
remarkable that Nick, you want to talk about an ascension in that draft. This is not related to the Hornets, by the way. Nick Stauskas at 8. Talk
man,
about an ascension following Michigan's championship
played
run.
the
It's
least seasons of
unbelievable.
anybody in the lottery. That
Say it again.
played the least seasons of any lottery pick from that draft.
Has to, right? I
It
mean,
has to.
like, you got Doug McDermott. You got Elfrid Payton. I digress, obviously, because we're no longer talking about the curse of the Hornets. But here's the other kind of flip side to this. The last few years, I think you would agree that it seems like there has been a turn. Like, me personally, I love the Con pick. I actually
Sure.
think I texted you about the Con pick when it happened because his floor is so high in the NBA. Like, I don't think that his ceiling will be nearly as high as many other people in the draft. But you know that that's a need of that team, right? Especially if you're planning to keep LaMelo, which I haven't heard anything otherwise. Do I think he'll stay there like as a career Hornet? I do not. I don't know anyone that will, but I think that when you think about like Brandon Miller plus Con plus the fact that they've got this talented team and a little bit of buzz following the summer league, do you remember what their over under on wins was for the season?
Yeah, I think it was in like the high 20s. I think, let me see. I think it was 27.
Well, they're not going to win that.
While I'm looking for this, yeah, I think to your LaMelo point, I don't think it's the problem with him is I think he's just an image 25 and a half.
That, I think I'm going to go over.
Yeah, maybe. But that was what I was about to say. It's all contingent upon LaMelo Ball. He's a productive guy. He's fun. He's entertaining. He's flashy.
For
He's
sure.
a exciting piece. People love him. He's a social media star, but he doesn't play. He's hurt all the time. And
Right.
even when he does play, is the basketball that he's playing conducive to winning basketball games in the at the highest level? I'm
Right.
not sure. I don't think you can really succeed in the NBA if LaMelo Ball is your best player. I'm not sure if you can do that if he's even your second best player at this point. He's incredibly talented. Let that not be lost in this.
Right.
His ability to lead a team, questionable. Brandon Miller, like him, would like to see prolonged health with him as well. Konkanipel, I'm interested to see what he is, but I agree with you. I mean, he's a high floor guy. And I think that they're just trying to get guys in there who are pros and guys who are safe picks at this point, who Liam McNeely, another one, guys who are going to be solid in the locker room and maybe potential trade bait later. Maybe they are going to eventually move off LaMelo when his value's high enough that they can get something back. I mean, I don't know that they're going to position themselves ever to have a deal like the Houston Kevin Durant deal where they trade Jalen Green. I don't know if LaMelo Ball's values is even as high as Jalen Green's right now, but we'll see.
I mean, when you're looking at their roster right now, right? Miles Bridges still there, Grant Williams still there, albeit coming off injury. Adding Colin Sexton was interesting. I don't hate it. I don't
He's a
hate that move.
professional. He's a professional scorer.
Yeah, like I think that again, like older guy. There's some real like interesting adding Mason Plumlee, like interesting veteran move, adding
It
Pat
feels like
Connaughton.
Mason Plumlee never left.
Right. And
It feels like he's been a
Dinwiddie.
lifelong Hornet.
Did I miss that? They added Dinwiddie and Taj Gibson. I mean,
Yeah, they signed
they
Dinwiddie.
have vets. Like
Yeah, they
this
have some
seems like a
solid bets.
more
They have
veteran.
they have 48 guards.
Right. That's the problem.
Yeah, Nurkic and Plumlee are going to be their centers. They have a lot of nice pieces on the perimeter. They have a lot of good threes and guards and fours even. But what are they have no bigs. They have no real bigs. Musa Diabate might be their starting center.
Yikes.
Big
Well,
fan of Musa in high school, but
we will see what becomes of the Hornets. As North Carolinians, it is always better when North Carolina teams do well. It is always more fun for the state. It is always more
rarely
fun for
happens.
conversations. It just happens so few and far and in between. I will say that unlike the Hornets, the glory years of the 2015 Carolina Panthers, I really wish that the Hornets could experience something similar.
About what was the other one, like 04?
Yes, you're talking about DeLome.
Yes.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Some real opportunities there for my Panthers. I'm also a Panthers fan, by the way. I don't know if I ever made that clear, but die hard since 95, baby. Anyway, moving on.
I picked the Steelers when I was 4 because the colors on Blitz 2000 were cool.
That makes sense. I
And
picked the Panthers because when I moved from North Carolina to Pennsylvania, I didn't want to choose between the two Pennsylvania teams. So I just picked this random franchise team, new franchise in
fresh
Carolina.
start. I had to weather the Tommy Maddox days.
All right, let's get into our countdown. So for today's top five, I'm excited about this topic. We're going to talk about the most underrated or underappreciated coaches in the grassroots space in North Carolina basketball. And so what we're talking about is whether it be AAU, whether it be high school, whether it be a head coach, whether it be an assistant coach. We're really excited about this because it's just a chance to kind of celebrate some of our peers for the great work that they're doing. I will say that for me, I will not name any coach that I have coached with so that I don't have to listen to people saying that I'm biased. So to DJ, to Ray, to Carrington, to Marcus Griff, to Peasy, to all these guys that I've worked with, to Chris James, to everyone, like, I love you. You're not going to be on this list for that reason. You know how I feel about you outside of this space. So that's a brotherhood that will last forever, but you will not be on the top five list, mostly because I just don't want to hear people whine about it.
my
But
list
you
is
know
only
how highly I
biased.
think about it. Say it again.
My list is only biased.
The only biased top five list. Fantastic. You start. Who do you have? We'll go one for one here.
Okay, so since we didn't want to overlap on names, we had a lot of the same names. I want to preface that, but I'll go ahead and start with Joe Badgett. I don't know that he's really con I a lot of the line of underrated coach may be a little thin here, because he's been a consistent winner since he took over.
Right.
I've written about him extensively. His teams always win. He gets players, he builds a team, he builds a culture, he keeps his players, and then he wins. He's in it for a title every year. First year at Queens Grant, he's in it. Every year he was at Carmel, he was in it. So Joe Badgett, I think, has been as dominant as a coach as you can find. Again, maybe not underrated, but a guy that I feel like should be mentioned at the top with all the rest of these coaches that we're going to mention
I have coached against Joe twice and I have lost twice. So
here.
kudos to Joe. My first one, I'm excited about this one, is Irv Turner from Andrews, out in High Point. I don't know if people are paying enough attention to that team and the way that he has helped build that culture and constructed that roster, but they're going to surprise some people this year. The challenge that I run into about any public school shout out is I don't know what divisions even look like anymore because it's crazy.
Especially after
So for
realignment.
me, I think that Irv told me they were like six or seven or something. I don't know. They're not eight. I know that. But I don't really know what that means in terms of who's in what. But that team has a ton of young talent. And I remember vividly having to compete against them last year. The way that Irv coached and strategized, I mean, it was a chess match. So tons of props to Irv. He's doing a great job. Keep doing your thing, man.
Yeah, and I think just to kind of build off of what you're saying about Irv, people need to realize that he's taking a lot of these kids from this area. It's not like he's going around and pulling kids from other areas. This is his pipeline, and he's kind of leaned into the kids that are from that county, that high school. They're supposed to be there, that district. So that's part of, I think what's great about what he's doing as well.
Really cool. Really cool.
Yeah. So another name I'll say, Michael Brooker at Cardinal Gibbons. Stylistically, I think he has one of the most pleasing aesthetics that you can find. The way that his teams are constructed, the way that they play, how smart they are, just the off-ball movement, the passing, the cutting. I mean, obviously they're a talented group with plenty of college players on their
Right.
roster, but last year with Cash McSweeney as the hub, it really just kind of allowed them to shine, and
Yes.
just all the pieces worked around it so beautifully, and it was just masterful. Just a machine, really.
The Princeton through Cash was nuts. That was one of the teams we had to play almost immediately after King transferred. And so I remember having to play Andrews at the event at Ben L. Smith and then immediately having to play Cardinal Gibbons.
Fun.
And like we were not prepared for what that level of motion looked like. And what's crazy is like against him as a coach, it might be close in the fourth, but if they hit you with like a 6 or 8 point run in the fourth, they're going to win by 15.
Right.
Like it's just one of those things that he's not sitting there trying to play in the 80s and 90s. He's like, we know what we are. We're going to get that ball to Cash and we're just going to rock out. So, I mean, I respect any coach who kind of sticks to his guns in that way.
For sure. I mean, and especially that's another group. You look at them, you wouldn't see them in warmups and be frightened by that team, but
Right.
the not again, they are a talented group, but the amount of buy-in that he can get across the board is, you rarely see that.
No, it's awesome. It's awesome. My next one is Rod Edwards, assistant coach at Greenfield. Rod and I obviously are close, and I think that for him, it's been amazing to see his sons continue to take off and see his oldest son, Nick, go to Roanoke and start to really find himself as a collegiate player there. Kobe obviously is someone with offers from all over the country. He's going to continue to be a focal point for Greenfield this year, and we're excited to compete against him throughout this season. But for Rod, I mean, what I've noticed over the course of the past 5 years is just his intelligence when it comes to making adjustments. I gave him a hard time because they beat us by 2 points in the first live period when we played at GDS in June. And when I talked to him about the adjustments afterward, he was kind of like, yeah, you know who that was, right? And I was like, yeah, I know it was you. Like, you don't have to be a jerk about this. But, he's an amazing person to kind of confide in. And I think that his time, both in the AAU space and in high school, has been really, really special. I'm interested to see what he does when Kobe goes to college. Because I think that he has a wealth of knowledge he needs to continue to share, but I don't know in what capacity or what his plans are. But huge shout out to Rod Edwards, man. He does a tremendous job.
Yeah, I agree. I've seen him more on the travel ball side more than on the high school side with Greenfield, but his teams were always great. I remember that backcourt with CJ Alston.
The
They were
Trez
tough.
team, right?
Yeah, Team Trez. So yeah, shout out to Rod for sure. My next one, I would have to say, and again, maybe not underrated because he's a first year guy, but Dorie Hines, I think,
Here we go.
how
Let's
can you
go.
not? How can you not pick a guy who was a head coach in college
Right.
just within the last few years, and circumstances happen and he ends up being the head coach at Myers Park, and their roster is looking better and better every day. They got Thomas Vickery now. They got
Crazy.
all Mac Walters, I think, will take a huge step forward.
IO.
Yeah, and Io. So I mean, I knew there was one I was forgetting, but that plus the pieces around it, think they're going to stay pretty relevant.
I think that Dory is a great pick because he's probably at a point where, because he's so new to the high school space, people aren't thinking much about what can happen. And then you land a Thomas Vickery who has a high major offer or two, or I think so. I think the majority of his offers, I believe, are in that mid-major range, but he definitely has some high major stuff and high major potential. But when you land a kid like that, everything changes. Because now
Sure.
it's like, oh my gosh, like they're in the highest classification of North Carolina in the 8A public. Like they're going to have a ton of opportunity to be successful. And talk about a talent-rich area when you're talking about Charlotte. Like Dory's going to be able to build that thing into something great for sure.
Yeah.
Mine is, I love this pick. I think it's tremendous. I really wish that we had a production team pass $0 to be able to celebrate it. Jeremy Ford from Weddington, and CC Elite. Like,
Formerly of Weddington.
where is he now? Remind me.
No more.
Oh, he's not there anymore.
No, he and Ellington stepped down.
Oh, they stepped down. That's right. That's right. That's right. But I mean, I vividly remember every time that I've competed against them, it is a closer game than you can ever imagine. And he, to have the creativity he did on offense while also balancing setting his team up to be successful on defense in that amoeba zone. Like, how often would you see a coach right now get suckered into playing man to man because Twitter whines about it or fans are complaining about it or this or that? And he's just like, yeah, I mean, we're not going to do that. We're going to stick to the way that we know. And that's hell or high water, what we're going to do for our approach. But I learned a lot from him when we started running the Amoeba Zone a little bit last year. It was all because of him
Yeah.
and his knowledge and his expertise. So shout out to Jeremy Ford because he's a tremendous coach.
And I think I couldn't agree more, but I think what I love about Jeremy Ford is that he looks like he could either be coming from or going to the golf course right after. And he's
Might
just
be
got that
both.
unassuming nature about him. He's just like,
It might
yep,
be both.
we're here. And he does so much more with less. I think that's another thing that I really appreciate.
Yes.
But so I'm gonna go again. This is my all biased team. I'm just joking, but here comes my Greensboro picks. So I have first, I would say Derek Partee. I think that it's hard to overstate kind of what he's done. Obviously, that's a talent-rich area at Ben L. Smith, and that just that general area of Greensboro is great. But I mean, Dudley's out there too, and they consistently get kids. But Partee wins every year. It feels like he's always in the mix. He finally got over the hump this last year, and they won, so that was huge. But I just think that they're a great program right now. They have Jai Dawkins and a bunch of other young pieces, especially
Right.
Cannon 2029 is going to be one of the next guys up there. So it's interesting to see just kind of how he's built this thing in the last, 5+ years.
Right.
They've always had college guys. Excuse me. They consistently get more and keep putting guys into college and winning along the way.
He is someone who is a molder of men, and he takes such great pride in being the coach in Greensboro.
Yeah.
Like, he wearing the 336 shirts in the title game, like knowing what his community is and who he's representing, I think is tremendous. Obviously for me as a coach on the eastern side of the 336, like I hold him in extremely high regard. I'm trying to get a game with them. I really am. I know that you have an event at Smith. I know that like they want to play Caldwell, and I get that. Like I get the 336 thing, especially in Greensboro, but I would love to be able to go and compete in some capacity. So coach, hit me up and we can get something done. Because I think that'd be a heck of a game going into this season for sure. This one is the one that honestly, of all the five on my list, well, never mind, because the first one is ultimately going to be the one that I want to talk about the most. But I'm excited to say this one, which is Whit Holcomb-Fay, who is an assistant coach at Forsyth Country Day School, state champion 2 years ago, Final Four last season. I don't know that there is another coach who balances holding his players to a high standard while also running and executing elite, elite stuff. He's also a coach kind of similar to Jeremy that's unapologetic about the strategy that they use in order to be successful. So huge shout out to Witt, Hall of Famer at Radford. This is someone who's done it at every level, has been an international pro. I hold him in extremely, extremely high regard, and I don't think he gets nearly the credit that he deserves as a coach in North Carolina.
I second that. I think Witt was one of the guys that I think we fought over who would
Right.
talk about him. I agree. He whenever the name comes up of, or the question comes up rather, of who are some guys that you think should get head coaching jobs, whether it be in high school or get assistant jobs in college. I genuinely think that he might be the best non-head coach in North Carolina right now. And that speaks volumes because there's so many great guys out there who are whether within travel ball or on high assistant staffs at high school. So yeah, shout out to Witt. It was a tough last live period, but I know that he's resilient. He'll be
Right.
back.
Who cares? Like, maybe like, who cares? That's a separate conversation. Who cares? But I'll save that for another day. But
But
what's
what I
the
appreciate about it is that he, of all people, leans into it, and
yeah,
he'll acknowledge it
exactly.
more than anybody. He'll say that we sucked and move forward accordingly. So my last guy on this list is kind of a newer guy, and it's going to kind of stay on the Greensboro theme, but it's really more of just a acknowledgement of what Josh Chavis has done just in his time at Northeast Guilford, a school that's really struggled over the years. It has a good pipeline of players, and it's just struggled to build a culture and consistently keep kids in the area. So what Josh Chavis has done last year, I think I wrote about it a couple weeks ago or a month ago rather, about them being that was their winningest t season in over a decade,
Right.
over a dozen years plus. So I'm eager to see how that kind of continues. They look good in June. So Josh Chavis, I think he's really building something at Northeast.
Awesome. Just got a big transfer, I believe, as well, if I'm not mistaken. I don't remember. It was do you remember who that was?
I'll have to look into it.
Think it was Jamari Shepherd, I believe, is now at Northeast, if I'm not mistaken.
That would be a big transfer, Jamari
No,
Sherman.
for sure. For sure. Guilford, man, kids moving all around. We're about to get to that in a second, but this is one that I'm excited to talk about because I don't think we agree that this person is underrated.
Yeah, he's not.
I 100% think he's underrated, and I'm going to explain why. But Frank Cantador from Concord Academy, formerly Concord First Assembly, multi-time state champion, has what seems like the ability to navigate whatever is best for his roster at all times. And when I start thinking about his career, I vividly remember in 2019 being in the gym at Ravenscroft for a Phenom event. We're about to play Greenfield, and his team is taking on one of the great Liberty Heights teams under Mike Wright. And totally outmatched, totally like, just physically not even in the same ballpark as what Liberty Heights was. And we're going to run this, and this, and execute it perfectly. And he had some size on that team. Like, he had two kids that were legitimately 6'9", and he had a great shooter, obviously, in Trey. But when you start thinking about what it means for this year's team, I have no doubt, because he always is going to find a way to have a European big. That's just a gift. Like, that is a staple of his teams. But that team right now is pretty much straight guards. They all share, they all pass, they all shoot, they all defend. Like, it's just team basketball. So they're going into the live period against real towering opponents, and they don't care because they just approach it with a dog mentality and team first mentality. So huge shout out to him to be able to navigate what he has. I know that you've written articles about him. I don't care. I think that, like, he doesn't get celebrated enough just in the space as that guy. I think in terms of top five head coaches in the state, he's on the list.
I agree. So he can't be underrated.
I don't think everyone else would agree. That's what I'm saying, is like,
Well, make a poll on Twitter then.
Yeah, I'll make it with what
Is
produce. I
Frank
guess I can
Amador
make a poll.
underrated?
Yeah,
All that
exactly.
said, I can't say anything more than, yeah, I agree with everything you said. He's a phenomenal coach. His teams were consistently relevant. They're always in the mix. I don't know the last time he's had a sub 20 win season. It just speaks to how consistent they are. No matter what kids that are there, they're going to win.
Yeah, I mean he's a dog, man. But to the 10 people that we named, keep doing your thing. It's been awesome to follow your careers and to learn from you guys. And I'm excited to continue to do that moving forward. If your name wasn't on the list, like, don't get emotional about it. We only had five per person. Like, it's not like we're slighting somebody to get somebody else on the list. Like, if anything, the TBS coaches, they'll probably be the ones yelling at me the most. And I'm okay with that too. Like, this is just a situation where we had to pick 10. There are dozens of great coaches in North Carolina.
Thanks.
We had to create a list for the first podcast. If you get mad, comment, like, share, do whatever you want to do. You can call us terrible names. Maybe that'll get us a fifth listener. Who knows? Maybe we'll
Seven
see.
started at six. We lost one. We lost two, and then they came back.
Right. So maybe it'll be lucky number seven. Let's get to the hot topic. So as we start to talk about kind of the last big portion before we get into our sound off to conclude our first podcast of Buckets and Banter, I think that we've got to discuss the transfer portal. I have thoughts about it as a private school coach. I have thoughts about it as a director of a Adidas sponsored AAU program. But I think that in general, oftentimes we only look at something that is popular in media and we just say, oh, it's bad. Like, to me, I think that that is a very short-sighted approach to the transfer portal. And I think that everyone's initial reaction to it is, well, it's not teaching kids how to be tough. It's not
Face
teaching them.
adversity.
Right. And like that, there is some element of that that is 100% true.
Totally.
But to me, what I think about it as is, as long as these opportunities, like, there's more teams than have ever existed in the amateur space. Take college out of it, like that transfer portal, like set number of teams, whatever. There's more teams in the amateur space than ever, which means there's more adults promising things. There's more parents who need information. Like, if there's more opportunities, it's just simply more likely to happen. So my challenge would be, like, how do we make it work so that it is teaching kids the right things? And maybe that's a different type of conversation. But to me, I think that there's good and bad with the portal, just like there is with any situation.
Yeah, I agree. I think but it starts at the top. I think this has kind of developed over time. Honestly, I think it's kind of a bigger picture thing that started with player movement in the NBA. And then obviously it didn't really happen in college until it was allowed to happen in college. Players 15 years ago weren't transferring like they are now. However, they didn't have the ability to. That
Right.
forfeiting a year just didn't seem feasible for most, athletes, especially if you were aspiring to go play professionally in some capacity. So I think that's really part of it, is the start of what it became in the NBA, now what it is in college. And it kind of allows, there's somewhat of a, it's accepted. It's not necessarily
Right.
embraced, but it's accepted by all the people that are involved in it, that it's just something that's inevitable at this point. And it's tough because, to your point, all these people are being promised things, and there's people who are, for lack of a better term, ignorant because they're just ill-informed and lack knowledge.
Right.
People who are in the space take advantage because they know the ins and outs of people who don't. And ultimately, that's what it comes down to, is do research. I feel like that's probably the biggest issue that I have with these
Right.
transfer portals, especially in high school. I see kids transfer all the time to places that they'll either A, never play, or B, places that have produced nothing that they are intending to become. So these people with these dreams of becoming a high major kid, well, the school that you're transferring to, when was the last time they put a kid high major? Okay, last year, how's the kid doing? 5 years ago, how was that kid? Did he
Right.
transfer down? Did he stay there? Was it a case study? Are there more examples? Just having more information has never hurt anybody. But
Right.
we're at a, we have some type of epidemic where nobody wants to do any research. We have more resources accessible than we ever had before. It's so simple to just search a coach, a school, what they've
For
accomplished,
sure.
the guys, and the
All people who know them.
totally. So yeah, it's shocking to me that in a time where we have more accessibility than ever, people are making more and more ill-informed decisions. And I think that also, not to say that people are weak or not facing adversity or whatever, it's almost become groupthink in a way of like, I have to do this because if I don't go to this school or this team, my kid will struggle or not get the same advantages as any other kid, which could be true in some capacity, but more often than not, is not reality.
I think that all of the points that you said are really valid. And what it makes me think about is this idea of alignment. Like every single person in a kid's journey has to be aligned for them to be their most successful self. That's my opinion. When I start thinking about like kids who have come to the Burlington school or left, that is always what leads to a kid being successful, is the ability to have parents, player, coach, trainer, travel coach, everybody has to be on the same page. And I think that when you lack alignment, ultimately what happens is that it just becomes not a fit. And I don't think that that is a bad thing. I think that it's a real thing. Like for me personally, with my story in high school basketball, I was the eighth man on my JV team as a 10th grader. I went to a massive public high school in Pennsylvania. Five of the people on my team, five of my teammates ended up playing collegiate football. One of them ended up playing in the NFL for 8 years. Shout out to Nate Stupar for his amazing career. Like, I'm sitting here at 6'4", 170 pounds. I can't play against this guy is 220 pounds in the 10th grade. Like, I mean, it's just not the same thing. So I was very fortunate because my family moved. My dad gets a new opportunity, a new job in Washington, D.C. And so I end up going to a much smaller, much more progressive, liberal private high school in Sidwell Friends School before they became what they are now. And so for me, I always joke with them when I talk to their coach, Eric Singletary. Shout out to Eric Singletary for his great knowledge and wisdom and for taking that program to new heights. But I always joke with him, like, this is the house, this beautiful new gym. This is the house that I built. Like my teammates built this.
Yes.
And he's like, yeah, like, you know, just gives us a hard time about it. But amazing guy. But anyway, I say that to say, like, then at Sidwell, I was really able to flourish. I was able to start for 2 years. I was able to be team MVP. We were able to win a conference championship for the first time in 37 years. Like those things happen as a result of transferring. So I think that it's, to your point, it's foolish to just sit here and say, well, like, oh, well, this is all negative. For me, I would never have been able to experience what I did through the basketball space if it was not for that transfer. Now, that transfer is different because my family legitimately moved. That's not always the same as what you would see now. But in the college space in particular, to say that this is, you know, oh, well, you've got a kid transferring four times in 4 years, this, and this. That's a money thing. Like, that's the second you get money involved in this, like, what do you expect a kid or their circle to do? Hey, man, you could be the starting small forward here and you can get 250,000, but if you go here, you might be this person and you might get 600. What are we, do you know the value of more? Like, what are you talking about? Like, that's human nature. Human beings respond to incentives. Like, this is, it's a silly thing to say that somehow that is the bad part of it. Now, when you start talking about character, right? An idea that I have heard recently that I really, really like is you transfer one time, cool. Like things happen. You transfer after that one time at the collegiate level, you have to sit a year. I like that personally.
I agree. I mean, I don't see the downside to this unless there's some type of applicable waiver, whether it be for a coach leaving or something of that nature. Yeah, I'm with you. One transfer, everything else you get penalized for, unless it's within the whatever I just said. So I think that there are, I want to make it clear that there are advantages to transferring. We can't, I'm not going to speak on colleges so much because, to your point, that's getting money involved, and I'm not going to speak on somebody's money and what they should or shouldn't do. As far as high school, there are benefits to transferring. Like you said, you had a transformation when you transferred, and it gave you an opportunity that you wouldn't have had otherwise. Those instances are okay, but there are too many instances where people are just going to these big programs wherever they are. I'm not going to say public, private, independent, but these big programs, and are just being part of the program. They're not ever going to contribute. And parents that think that these kids are going to contribute are none the wiser, because they think that they're just part of, this is just part of the situation. If I just continue to stay on the grind, eventually their time will come. And then come junior, senior year, and they're asking where minutes are and what's going to happen, and they get recruited over continually or what have you, then they're dissatisfied and time's too late. You have too many kids throwing away critical development years when they're 15, 16, and 17 years old. That is as important as anything. It's hard to wind back the clock when you're 18, 19, 20, going into college, just learning how to play basketball, just getting reps. Reps are more important than anything. If you're not playing, you're not doing what you need to be doing. You're in a situation, and again, this may fall on the player. I'm not in every practice, so I can't profess to say why guys should or shouldn't be playing. But at the end of the day, if you're putting in the work and you're still in a position where you're not getting reps, put yourself in a different position.
And I think that within that, coaches need to take more ownership over what matters for the trajectory of the player. I think oftentimes, and I'm guilty of this, you're carrying the weight of the world around over every win or every loss, as opposed to thinking about the young men that are in that locker room, what their character is, what their goals are, et cetera, et cetera. And specifically when it comes to the transfer portal or kids transferring at the high school level, like, coaches have got to ask themselves when these kids transfer, like, where did I go wrong? Like, is there something that I need to be doing differently? Like, am I doing everything I can to get them seen by a college coach? Now, sometimes that doesn't even apply to the kid that has left. And so that again goes back to your point about getting the information, being informed, et cetera, et cetera. But I think that right now, the more that there can be continuity and consistency within a team, we all know that's what's going to lead to their success, right? Like, look at the Thunder this year at the NBA level. You go out, you've got pretty much the whole team together for multiple years, and then you add one piece that's new, and that's the guy that can help you get to where you want to go. Two pieces. Who are the two?
Alex Caruso and Isaiah Hartenstein.
That was the other one. That's a great point. Yes. But there's an element of that that needs to exist. But I also think that the reality now is, this idea of having a new team every year, like, I think you would agree, this is kind of trickling into the high school space too.
Yeah, in some capacity, I think the problem is, though, is that with these, when you have the ability to team build, you have too many coaches or programs that are not building teams. They're building all-star teams. They're just acquiring talent with no concept of cohesiveness or a bigger picture. You have to be adaptable, either A, to your personnel, or you have to get personnel that is adaptable to your concepts. So one or the other has to give. Too many guys are just acquiring talent because it's sexy on paper. Hey, if I get this 6'9" kid, it's going to be great because he's a rising sophomore. And then the kid doesn't develop or doesn't play. And then the kid's lost a year of their development. And then the recruitment stunts. It happens all the time.
And then you want to, then you might hear some of those people blame the kid too, when in reality it was about the plan all along.
Or the fit or whatever, the context, the circumstance. Yeah, a lot of this stuff matters. And again, it just goes back to being informed and putting yourself in a position, and or your kid in a position to be successful. It's obviously easier said than done. It's hard to know who to trust in these spaces, but at the end of the day, research is readily available. I can't say that enough.
And the other thing too that I would say within this before we kind of get into the last part is like the clarity around what each person can and will be on that team is so essential. Like, as someone who has worked at a private school, who has experienced a great deal of transfers both in and out of the program, like that in private school, that happens. I don't know a single team where that does not take place.
Sure.
And I think that for me, my biggest reflection as a coach and how to navigate this space is like, you have got to be crystal clear with what the plan is. Because in the moments where we have been crystal clear as coaches, you know, as athletic personnel, whatever the case may be, the path forward is really, really good. Like, we were crystal clear with King Gibson, crystal clear. And like, that plan worked, everyone was aligned. Obviously, I didn't want him to leave because I'm not an idiot, but
Sure.
it is a
Pretty
situation where
good.
now that I look back at him and his rankings and the offer list that he has and what he will become, I actually spoke to his dad recently, which was phenomenal. Shout out to Dane Gibson for the great talks that we've had. But you know, that's a situation where, you know, like the vision was aligned. I've also had many situations where we haven't been aligned and I haven't delivered on what I've said. And I have to own that. And I don't know that enough coaches will or do own that. But in general, I don't think it's going away. I think that this illusion of like, well, it's all bad and it's all this and it's all that. Like, well, if it's all bad, you can just sit there and be a negative Nancy. But at some point, like, we've got to be able to figure this out because kids are always going to be coming through programs and they're always going to be here. So we have to do right by them in terms of how to navigate this space. That would be
Totally.
kind of my final thought on it.
Yeah, ultimately I would say transfers, as somebody who's single and not married, this is going to be a silly analogy. It feels like transfers are almost, you can equate them to like marriages and divorces, because they are similar in a way. You know, it is breaking up in a fashion. It's never good to have more. It's never been like, oh, you've transferred 5 times, awesome. You've transferred 3 times, great. One, okay, I can manage that. More than that seems excessive. Two, what do you think?
I think that as someone who is married, I totally understand where you're coming from. And by totally understand, I mean you just did the absolute best job that you could in order to create that analogy and make it a real and living
On
thing.
the
So
fly.
shout out to you for doing that. Let's continue to help these young people, man, especially for the coaches in this space. Like, we just got to continue to make sure that that clarity is there for sure. Let's get into the final portion of the podcast. My sound off, and the sound off section is always going to be just honestly, guys, our most brief section, or at least it's intended to be. This shouldn't be something where like Jeff or I are going on a 30-minute diatribe about the negative aspects of the NIL payments that colleges are giving players. So for me, my sound off today is really just on the respect of the game. And I think that what I love about the media space right now is I love listening to ex or former athletes share their perspective because they have inside information that other people just simply don't have access to. So when I start thinking about respecting the game, what I'm talking about is there's this dichotomy that exists between the old school and the new school. And the old school all thinks that the new school is not fundamental enough, and they don't play enough team basketball, and they don't do this, and they don't do that. And the new school thinks that the old school is all plumbers, and they weren't any good, and they weren't. And it's like both of those perspectives are actually inaccurate. And like what I have been blessed with is I have a son, Trey, who is now 6. He'll turn 7 in October. He has taken a great interest in sports, which I love. He has taken a great interest in basketball, which I love. So his nighttime routine is pretty basic. Like, we get on jammies, we make sure that we're ready in bed, we read a little bit of a book. One of them always involves basketball. Another one is something fun or silly that kind of stretches him, and he reads it a little bit, which is great. But then immediately after that, his go-to is he gets on the phone with me. and he'll watch 3 minutes of any number of things that he wants. Now, when it's an animal book, it's most likely he's going to want to see something about animals. But right now, we're big into this basketball encyclopedia for kids. So all he's watching is Michael Jordan highlights. And there is a 2-hour video on YouTube about all of Michael Jordan's highlights from his two three-peats. And you want to know what's so funny about how people don't respect the game? What are some of the biggest knocks on Michael Jordan from the new generation, Jeff? Like, what do you think those knocks are on him
Took too many
compared to LeBron,
shots. Took too
obviously?
many shots. Couldn't shoot threes. Competition was weak.
So let me say this, having now watched with my son,
I would like to say before you say that, those are
yes.
not my takes. That's
No,
just me.
I get it. And
That's
I
just me
asked you for,
saying what they would
yes.
say.
Sure.
Playing devil's advocate, I'm not.
First game of his first finals. Does anyone know what this man's stat line was? 36, 8, and 12 assists. He averaged 9 assists for the series. And the guys that are defending him on the Lakers are all-time great defenders, whether it be an AC Green, whether it be a Byron Scott. These are not slouches when it comes to defensive basketball. The flip side of that is, what do you think every old school fan would say about the Thunder? What are the knocks on the Thunder right now?
They're soft,
Right.
even though they're
Soft.
not. Like that's the whole thing.
Not fundamental enough. Like, Shea dominates the ball too often. Like, generic offense, blah, blah. Like, guys, that's not true. Like,
All silly talking points on
well,
both sides.
exactly. But that's the thing, is it's like there's no mutual respect for the fact that the people that came before you paved the way for you to get here. So you studying their game, their footwork, this and that matters tremendously. The flip side of that is the old school guys are passing the torch, or should be passing the torch in the correct way. And it feels like right now there's this like huge contrast between the two. And you see it now with kids at the teenage level who think, well, these are the only point guards that have ever mattered, or these are the only, whoa, like, these guys were really, really good. Like, it's not that any player can't exist in a separate era. It's that that argument is actually stupid because you're never going to see it anyway. So,
Yeah.
why not learn and respect and watch the film? I'm watching the film with Trey. I know what I see. So, to me, I think that my big challenge and my sound off to end our first podcast is, guys, just respect the game of basketball. This isn't a situation where it needs to be this beef between new, old, this, that, and the third. Like, the game is beautiful. It's meant to create this enormous amount of emotion and build character skills that can transcend lifetimes. Like, let's respect what is in front of us and what is behind us. That would be my sound off for today. Let's respect the game a bit more.
So I would just have two things to add to that. One, Trey and I have the same bedtime routine, and two, yeah, I think it's just one of those things where it's impossible to look at basketball as a whole, as a collective.
Right.
The game's just changed so much. Rules have changed.
Yes.
Science has changed. Medical stuff has changed.
Yes.
Everything has changed. Everything has changed except for the dimensions of the court and the basket. That's the only thing that's remained the same. Well, and even that's changed when they added the 3-point line. But my point being is, it's like Bob Cousy, people look at the film and they laugh at it because he looks silly dribbling the ball. You weren't allowed to use your wrist to possess the ball back then. People don't care to read the rules. They don't know
Right.
what he was dealing with. You couldn't turn the ball over. That was a travel, that was a carry. So, and then you look at the illegal defenses and how things have changed over time and how things, it's different. Scoring is different
Right.
now. 30 points per game is not better or worse than it was 20, 30 years ago. It's just different.
Correct.
Yeah, is it more efficient? Sure, but it's just different. The game is different all throughout these decades, and any real basketball fan or person that actually educates themselves on the game has gone through this, and they have watched the game evolve, and they see what it is and what it was and what it's become. So the greats are always going to be great. Those guys were going to be great in any era. If you drop Larry Bird or Wilt Chamberlain in today's game, they would have been great regardless, because the resources given to them would have allowed them to be great, even though they were great in their own time.
Isn't it so funny too that like when people talk about those things, they're always like, well, Larry Bird could never be great now because of the way that he played then. And it's like,
Larry Bird is Kevin Durant.
you're not paying attention to what evolution is. Like the spacing of the modern, look at the high, look at the film. I just, this is the thing that bothers me. Everyone wants to make arguments. It's all in the film.
Yeah.
It all exists. Like,
But they watch the film and they think that the guys that are in it are just aren't as good. But it
right?
ultimately,
Like, oh, these guys aren't skilled. What are you talking about? Like, it's a totally different thing. Now, are players potentially more skilled? Sure, but they should be based on evolution. Like,
sure.
but at the same time, are there missing elements of the game that were better back then in terms of footwork, in terms of foundation? You can make that argument.
Well, and in terms of team building, because there was less player movement, because there was less player freedom. So you
Right.
had more established teams that were running legitimate offenses and had real defensive structures. Now that's impossible. So you see so many teams just run a
Right.
spread
Well
high pick
said.
and roll system. So, but anyway, I digress. I would say, for my talking point, ultimately it kind of just feeds off of yours in terms of respect the game, but more on the court. I understand that guys are playing more basketball than ever, but I just think, why are you playing if you're not playing hard? I just don't understand the sentiment behind playing anything other than hard. I don't get it. I've watched so many kids over the last decade play their way into scholarships and into stuff beyond high school. So I just don't understand why kids don't play hard all the time. It's not even like a coaching cliche, but there's just no reason not to. There's no benefit to playing anything other than your hardest, which, again, as I say that, sounds corny, but it's just real. Guys who play hard stand out. Point blank, period.
I mean, I don't know that there's anything else to even say about that. I mean, you're seeing kids get scholarship offers based on production. Production in large part is based on your ability to play hard. I mean, we have players right now at TBS who I think are playing their way into some pretty phenomenal situations because of their effort. And because when people look at a stat line, that's what's sexy and grabs attention. So I totally understand it. There's also nothing more infuriating than losing a game based on effort. Literally nothing. There is nothing as a coach. Like, if you do your part with the scout and we feel prepared and you go out and you simply just don't play as hard as you should, it is the most enraging thing because it's something that is totally out of your control as a coach. I mean, you can give as many motivational speeches as you want. I actually enjoyed coaching this past weekend for this reason. Losing the first game on Friday and just being like so unnecessarily enraged because I lost that game to the Charleston Raptors, like absolutely just furious. And literally the next day in our huddle, just being like, all right, no more like team talks or motivation. Like, we'll talk right before tip off. Let's rock and roll. And then kids playing well, like that was very gratifying. So, no, I'm with you. I don't understand it, but you know, from the kids' perspective too, it's like this may be a little too much though, Jeff. And that may be a topic for another podcast,
Totally. I don't
but
disagree.
I think that, you know, when you start talking about them, I remember my AAU structure when we would go to play. It was all about qualifying for Orlando and going to AAU Nationals.
It's a
If you
different
were
world.
not able to go to Vegas or California, that was the place you wanted to go. And they had two divisions, right? They had Division One, which was all of what would become the Nike, the Adidas shoe sponsored teams. And then you had more good regional teams, which is what I played on. Shout out Eastern Shore Hoop Stars, St.
Sure.
Michael's in Eastern Maryland. But for a team like that, we only had to play like the bracket to get to that point was only like 8 games. Like it was, you don't get many chances at this, dog. Like it's like there were 2 games at a local high school, and there you'd probably play 3 or 4 showcase games over the course of 2 weekends. I vividly remember playing teams like Baltimore Stars or Cecil Kirk when they were at their peak. Like I vividly remember this, but like you can give your effort when it's only 8 over the course of 2 weekends in a month. Like that's not as challenging. Kids now are playing, it's crazy. Like
I agree. I don't
it's
disagree with
crazy.
that, but to your point, that can be left for another
Fair
podcast.
point. I digress. I don't, I
Table
digress.
that.
Cool. Any last words for the people before we get out of here?
Nope, I think that that was worth our $0 we put into it.
Yes, as you heard here first, Jeff just said our podcast is worth $0. And
Currently.
while that is a joke, he is also not wrong. It literally is $0 at this
Wait till we
current
open it up to being publicly traded.
time. Fantastic. Thank you everyone for tuning in to the first episode of Buckets and Banter. We hope that you guys will tune in and we'll continue to add some listeners here in the near future. If you do have any ideas about topics to converse or to talk about, or to banter about, feel free to shoot us a comment, a DM. Jeff really likes when parents of players that he's writing about DM him about various mistakes that he's made. And that will definitely be something that we save for another time. But thanks so much for tuning in, guys, and we'll see you next week.